from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Louisiana pro-lifers experienced a setback last week when the U.S. Supreme Court blocked a state law from taking effect that would have required doctors performing abortions to hold admitting privileges in nearby hospitals. With this temporary stay, the High Court's decision was another turn in an ongoing legal struggle over abortion in America. This week on Register Radio, we talked to Register Senior Editor Joan Frawley Desmond about this situation and the news of late. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio. I'm back from maternity leave, where I spent ample time cuddling my third little baby boy and not reading the news. So, thankfully, Matthew Bunsen, the Register's senior editor and co-host for Register Radio, has been holding down the fort. Matthew, thank you very much for the ways that you have kept Register Radio going.
Oh, it's a privilege, and welcome back. We've all missed you.
It's good to be back, and it's also good to have the flexibility of sometimes still being home with that baby while I'm following the news. So EWTN should be blessed for their maternity leave advantages. But this is not a laughing matter that we're talking about on this show. It's a serious law that Louisiana was trying to get on the books that would protect life in an important way, and it has been stayed, I guess is the technical term. The Supreme Court has made a ruling that makes this law temporarily not in effect. So let's talk about what has happened here and bring Joan on. Joan, it's great to have you.
Hi, Jeanette. Welcome back.
Thanks. So, Joan, you've been following this news, and you've done a good bit of reporting on it. We have not seen the story yet because you're still taking the time to gather expert thoughts on what is happening here with the Supreme Court and this particular judgment on this abortion law. But first of all, let's talk about what the law does. It was a 5-4 vote on the Supreme Court. Excuse me. Let's talk about what the Supreme Court did. It was a 5-4 vote about this Louisiana law. But what did the law do? What was going on in Louisiana?
The law really had a pretty narrow focus, Jeanette. It was just it directed abortion providers to have hospital admitting privileges no more than 30 miles from their businesses. So that was the sum total of the law. And many did not think it was extreme within
right.
the state, but this is such a sensitive matter. It's not surprised it was flagged and that it was put, there was some pushback, by the justices.
And of course, and if I remember correctly, in Louisiana, this would have left, I think, only three abortion, clinics, open in the state, is what they were saying. So, that was the claims of, the pro-abortion, factions, and that's what the U.S. Supreme Court heard in some of these arguments. What was the reasoning behind the temporary stay?
So how it works for the temporary stay is that for now, the case could be taken up by the Supreme Court on the merits. So the Supreme Court did not, when it issued the stay, it did not decide the case on the merits. So just to be clear, there were headlines saying Supreme Court blocks Louisiana law, and mm-hmm. it looked like that was it for the law. That's not the case. The law could still take effect down the road. And a key issue here holds to legal precedent, and it involves, you may remember, the Texas case in 2016. There were restrictions placed on abortion providers at that time. The restrictions were more comprehensive. They not only included admitting privileges for nearby hospitals, they also included raise standards for ambulatory care, sort of similar to, you know, to hospitals or other kinds of clinics. And so, you know, which in itself, Jeanette, let's just say, underscores the difference in standards required to operate an abortion clinic. And so you would think people saying in the name of women that they want to keep these clinics open, they don't really deal with the issue that they're really arguing for lower standards than apply to other healthcare facilities that care for people in other obstetric, you know, situation. So that part is really a disturbing aspect.
Right. And you know, it was just, I don't remember how many years, a few years ago, that the Gosnell case, and this is the doctor, Dr. Gosnell in Philadelphia, who, you know, it was revealed that, that he had all sorts of horrible things going on in this abortion clinic, substandard health care by far. And after that was revealed, a lot of states rushed to put laws on the books to help make the situation more transparent in terms of how abortion clinics were running. And these kind of laws that required physicians to have admitting privileges in hospitals was one of those kind of laws that came after the Gosnell revelation. So there was a bit of a trend, I guess, to put these kind of laws on the book. There's another trend that you've been studying with this particular court decision, and that's a trend with Chief Justice Roberts. So it was really his decision to make this stay. It was his deciding vote, if you will.
Correct. And people were shocked by that because they felt there might be more to it than just a temporary suspension, that it might reflect the Chief Justice's views about the Louisiana law and result in him opposing the law once it was, if and when it's decided on the merits, which is likely to happen, but probably wouldn't before next fall at the earliest. And so that's a really key point. But getting back to the Texas case, the 2016 decision to overturn the Texas law, which, as I mentioned, is much more comprehensive in its attempt to restrict abortion practices or regulate them than the Louisiana law is, the Chief Justice joined the dissent of Alito and Thomas. So the Chief Justice dissented from the majority's opinion, which overturned the law. He did not agree with that opinion. And let's keep in mind, this was a more comprehensive law. The Louisiana law is a narrower law. So many say, well, if the Chief Justice felt that the Texas law passed constitutional muster, why would he then suddenly believe that the Louisiana law didn't? The wild card here is really that the Texas law hinged a lot on facts, mm-hmm. or so-called facts. In this era, of course, we have fake news, we have fake facts. There was a lot of debate about what facts were really true and what facts weren't. But those who supported the side of the Texas abortion clinics noted that since the law had taken effect, that 20 out of the state's 40 clinics had closed. So that fact was debated. There were other facts put forward as well. You know, there's been a general national decline in abortion. Could that have affected the bottom line of these abortion businesses? So you're going to see that same debate. Mm-hmm. The difference in Louisiana is because there has been a stay and the law has not actually gone forward, we're not going to have as much possible data related to the law's likely impact, right? So what we are going to have is people watching to see if these three abortion providers do get admitting privileges or not.
Well, that was one of the points that Justice Kavanaugh, who is new to the court, was trying to make, that he voted against the injunction and then wrote his own independent dissent, making the argument that the law should be allowed to go into effect so that we can actually measure the impact of it. Which raises the interesting question that just in the going on 3 years from the Texas law, here we have a fairly different composition of the court with the retirement of Anthony Kennedy. Now we have Neil Gorsuch and just recently Justice Kavanaugh. So what are we to make of this situation now relative to abortion laws in general?
Well, I think that's why pro-lifers felt ambushed by Roberts' decision to stay the law, because they thought, whoa, what's up here? You know, they were ready for things to move forward on abortion law and have more sharper restrictions on state laws or supporting state laws in the case of Louisiana. So I think that's tricky. But there are two issues really, Matthew, here. One has to do with pro-life hopes that a now 5-4, you know, the majority of five justices now reportedly seeking more restrictions or likely seeking more restrictions on abortion. You have that on one hand, You also have the resignation of Justice Kennedy, the perceived swing vote. Kennedy, in some ways, reflected the fact that the court, yes, there were two ideological wings, but there was also sort of a center part with people swinging back and forth. And that, you know, let some people believe, well, the court isn't so political, right? Now the court won't be predictable in its outcome because it's above politics. Now the issue is that some will say, you know, the two wings are operating predictably. There's no swing vote. And so some have argued that Roberts is stepping into that. I don't see much sign of that, but Roberts did speak recently at Belmont University Law School. He had a lot of interesting things to say. He was speaking to Albert Gonzalez, the old attorney general who was put forward as a Supreme Court justice and blocked. His nomination was blocked. And he brought up a couple of points, and he said, yes, I would like to downplay the ideological divisions on the court and get more unanimous decisions. But he said, I also don't want people to restrict what they have to say and to restrict their point of view by seeking unanimity, you know. So he's aware of that. And so there's a lot of the optics related to that, which we can debate, but I guess we'll see how Roberts really feels about this.
Right. Joan, you know, in some of our editorial discussions this week, and this is one of the fun things about Register Radio, is our whole scope is to kind of get behind the scenes of how the Register works and what our reporters are hearing. And so, you know, we've been having conversations this week about Roberts himself. And one of the things I think you brought up is that when Roberts was brought to the court, there wasn't a lot of record in terms of cases he had decided on abortion, right? That's what...
Right. And, you know, many people said Roberts was a perfect example of someone, you know, a potentially conservative jurist who could get where originalist is probably a better word, originalist, someone who interprets the Constitution as the framers intended. There wasn't much on the record, which is, of course, why many people believed he could even get confirmed.
Right.
So there was a lot of debate. Gorsuch, you know, more recently, Gorsuch has had written on, you know, end-of-life issues and seemed to hint at what he would do. Kavanaugh had a record on HHS mandate because he had been on the D.C. appellate court. But none of these necessarily point to how they would, you know, act in a case that could really challenge precedent.
Right.
I think what's interesting here, I was talking to Jerry Bradley, the Notre Dame law professor who follows these issues very closely. He thinks this case could at least overturn legal precedent from the Texas case.
Wow.
In other words, a state law that perceived by some to pose a quote, undue burden on access to abortion could that legal precedent could be overturned and we could move closer to the core of Roe v. Wade. And so we'll have to see whether that's going to happen.
Sure.
But, you know, that's where things are going. And, yeah, there has been anxiety about Roberts, but given his vote in the Texas case, I'm not sure that it's well-deserved.
Sure. And you also made the point, again, in discussions this week that his role as Chief Justice is could be that he's seeking to bring the court back from too strict ideological division. And that's an important role. And that's an important role for the court, especially in a time when the country itself seems to be divided and certainly our Congress is divided. So the it's important that the court isn't ideologically divided.
But also, is it fair to add that over the years, over the decades, with the likes of Justice David Souter, who proved such a colossal disappointment to the pro-life movement and to conservatives in general, that there is this generalized anxiety over anyone who's appointed, who's supposed to have strong conservative or traditionalist credentials?
Right. It's justifiable, the anxiety.
Absolutely. I think there's enormous anxiety. People feel they've been betrayed in the past, and they're afraid they're going to be betrayed again. So I think that's legitimate. It's interesting, when Robert spoke at Belmont University Law School, I was actually very struck by what he said. He had a very humble view of his role, and I think what he's trying to do, I don't think he's going to succeed because the court's role has become so important in this polarized political environment that we're in. He said, that the people who drafted the Constitution, most of whom had risked their lives in the Revolution, and all of who had undertaken great sacrifices to have the opportunity to govern themselves, they would not have sat around in Constitutional Hall and said, I've got an idea, let's pick a handful of guys who aren't elected, who can't be replaced, and let's have them make all the hard decisions.
Right. No, that makes total sense. It's very interesting to watch this and to look at it in the level of detail, Joan, that you're looking at it. I look forward to that story that you're doing now that kind of brings to light all that you've learned from the experts you've been talking to on this case and also on Chief Justice Roberts. We're going to take a break right now, and we're going to keep Joan on. And when we come back, we're going to catch up on more news, including what's going on in New York and Governor Andrew Cuomo, what's going on in Virginia, and also the upcoming Vatican Summit. More when we come back.
Don't miss a moment of 2019. Try 6 issues of EWTN's National Catholic Register today for free. Award-winning journalism that goes beyond what you'll find from any secular news service. With the Register, you'll get the real story behind the events that unfold over the course of the year. Try the Register for free today and get it delivered to your home, office, or parish. Want to continue your subscription after your free trial? Just pay $49.95 and you'll get a total of 26 issues filled with spiritual insights on world events, along with compelling Catholic news and information. To get 6 free issues, order online at ncregister.com/NYR or call 800-421-3230 and mention code 919-NYRA. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
Millions of Americans were appalled with New York's legislation that legalized abortion up to the moment of birth and allowed killing babies who survive. Yes, I'm talking about infanticide. Braddock Chiropractic, north of Dallas, Texas, came up with a heartwarming, life-affirming response to New York's legislature, declaring open season on its unborn babies and mothers. Dr. Caleb Braddock announced on a Facebook video they were holding a baby diaper drive for True Options Pregnancy Center that provides free services to women and men experiencing an unexpected pregnancy. Dr. Braddock said they felt heartbroken over what happened in New York, so they did something positive to help babies nearby. They're a good example for all of us to follow.
Follow us on Twitter at Life Issues USA and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Let's return to Register
Welcome
Radio
back to Register
on
Radio.
EWTN.
I'm Jeanette DiMello, and I'm joined by my co-host Matthew Bunsen and Joan Desmond, our senior editor. We've been talking about the implications of the Supreme Court's decision to stay a Louisiana law on abortion. And really, I want to broaden the conversation up out a little bit now to talk about what's been happening on abortion throughout the country. And of course, the most shocking and probably the most talked about thing of the last couple of weeks has been the New York law. It's a horrifying law that allows abortion right up until the day a woman is to deliver. And there's just been a lot. This is something I missed while I was on maternity leave and would catch snippets of here and there. And it's really, truly horrifying. I've also appreciated greatly, as I come back, all of the bishops who have said more needs to be done to stop Governor Cuomo, and that's kind of what I want to talk about. What is the talk about what can be done now that this law is out there and Governor Cuomo is walking around plotting it? I throw that out there to both of you. I'm so sorry.
Go ahead, Joan.
Joan, go ahead.
I don't actually know,
okay.
Cut that part out.
That's fine.
But I don't know all the talk, but I do know there have been discussions about what can be done canonically. I know some have question Cardinal Dolan's response to Cuomo. I think Dolan argued that that there was no point in imposing, you know, publicly imposing penalties on Cuomo because Cuomo was engaged in kind of a tit for tat and sort of enjoyed playing that role against the church. And so Dolan, I think, was Cardinal Dolan was disinclined to participate in that. Others said, well, that doesn't really matter. There's an objective reality here that should be acknowledged publicly and acted on. So I think that debate is ongoing. There's always a question about the optics and the whether these kinds of public statements can be counterproductive. But I can assure you that from all I can see in the debate online and with our readers, many people do not think they're counterproductive. Would you agree, Matthew?
Yeah, I would. And it's been very interesting to sort of chart this with Governor Cuomo, who, of course, is a self-proclaimed Catholic. And what can we do in a situation like this? And I don't think there has been such interest in what canonists or experts in canon law have to say. This has been a bonanza for them over the last few weeks, as we've heard different opinions from canonical experts. And one thing, though, that we hit on in our editorial this last week was this idea, as Monsignor Charles Pope noted, that the church at this point has to make some kind of a firm stand, especially right now, given the assault on the church's credibility because of the clergy sexual abuse crisis, but also because it's just the right thing to do.
Absolutely. It's the right thing to do. It also sends a signal as other states are considering similar kinds of radical legislation. I mean, it needs to be clear to Catholics that this is not something that Catholics can go supporting, that it's complicity in furthering abortion. And that's it's very clear. So I look. Yeah, go ahead, Matthew.
Well, I was going to say that there's also this the key element of something like excommunication. And Cardinal Dolan was mentioning that he doesn't want this to be used as a weapon. And one of the points that a number of people have made is that we also have to remember that excommunication and these types of penalties are also medicinal.
Right.
That they're trying to exhort and call the person, in this case, Governor Cuomo, and those who also support what is the most one of the most radical bills we have seen on abortion in American history, to come back from this, to make actual repentance of what you're doing.
Right. That's Condon's piece, Ed Condon's piece that he wrote for the Register. Ed is an editor at Catholic News Agency, but he gave us a commentary called Saving Andrew Cuomo's Soul, and that's exactly what he writes. Ed is a canonist. He's a canon lawyer. And he's arguing that this is a medicinal, not weapon, but a way of bringing him back and helping others not to fall into the same trap. And so it's a very interesting piece that was posted to the Register at the end of January. So it's worth reading, and it'll be in an upcoming print edition. Important piece, Saving Andrew Cuomo's Soul.
And we've had a number of bishops weighing in on this as well. And they're not necessarily disagreeing with Cardinal Dolan, but what they're advocating is finding a way to do exactly that. And so we've seen recommendations, for example, from Bishop Thomas Daly. You know, Joan, you've just had a great and very widely read profile of Bishop Daly of Spokane, Washington, who's suggesting that we apply Canon 915, which declares that those who, quote, obstinately are persevering in manifest grave sin are not to be admitted to Holy Communion.
I think one thing that was very shocking for people was not only that the law was passed and signed by Governor Cuomo, a self-identified, quote, Catholic, but that he celebrated the passage with obvious glee and, you know, with lights in New York going pink and everything else. And the horror of that, it almost felt diabolical. I also think, and I wonder if you guys agree, I think there's another aspect to people seeking, hungry for some clarity here, and that is we're in a period of confusion. And people feel that this is another area of confusion. And if the bishops don't speak out, there will be more people confused about whether this is really a problem. So I think we can't underestimate that aspect of the of the problem right now. We're in we're in the abuse crisis that sowed confusion about many aspects. And there's also debate over established teaching. So I think there's a huge amount of turmoil. And looking at the comments for my piece on Bishop Daley, who, just to be clear, Bishop Daley did not, he weighed in a little bit about Cuomo, but also just said, self-identified Catholic politicians in my diocese that take this position should not present themselves for communion until they have done what the church has directed, which is to go to confession, to repent of their sins, and to start over again. And so he was very clear about that. He didn't name people, but he was very forthright. And that clarity is what I noticed a lot of readers seem to really embrace.
One of the things that Bishop Daley said in the interview with you, Joan, was about One of the things that Bishop Daley has talked about is how diabolical this crisis is right now in the church. And I'm not talking only about the pro-life, the abortion crisis in the U.S. We're talking about the sex abuse crisis in the church. And so in the days leading up into the summit, it's very interesting to hear a bishop talk so clearly about this problem. I think that's one of the reasons why your story has done so well online, Joan, is that Bishop Daley is talking about it with crystal clarity. And we need that kind of crystal clarity, both on the abortion front and the pro-life front, and also on the sex abuse front and how we're going to fix this problem. We are looking for answers next week. They will probably be slow in coming, although there will be great deliberation for the summit in Rome next week. We'll report on that then. And again, Joan, thank you so much for being with me on this inaugural show, my first show back.
The new year, too.
Exactly. So remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, to check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks, as always, for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Back until next week. God bless you.